Welcome back to another episode of the Profitable Audience Podcast. And today we're going to talk about an affliction that affects a lot of entrepreneurs, and that is shiny object syndrome.
Yeah, we missed you last week. We did a guest recording. Did you know about this?
No, I didn't. Who was on?
Yes, we had special guest Andrea.
Oh, of course. I should have known.
Yes. Actually, we had special guest Andrea. I almost recorded a podcast by myself, but I still might do it eventually. But I ran out of time last week because I was, holding down the fort for you while you were gallivanting the world. But no, we talked about burnout.
Ah.
And it's interesting because the burnout episode is out. So if you're listening to this, you can go to episode 114 and listen to the burnout one. But it's funny, once she started talking about it, she's had a lot of people reaching out to her and saying, hey, I'm experiencing the same thing. So apparently it's a big deal.
What is this thing called burnout? Yeah, well, I don't want to rehash the last episode,
we won't, because we started the podcast saying we had to do this without Steve because he has no idea what it is. So, and actually, this topic, I wonder how much you know about too, because it's definitely not something that I see in you very often.
That's correct. I'm very calculated whenever I take on anything new.
Yeah.
So, I don't know where you want to start with this.
Let's talk about what it is. And it's interesting because my first experience with sort of defining shiny object syndrome, I've probably always had it, but was in 2014. Jeff and Mandy Rose gave a talk at one of my blogging events, and they talked about how Jeff has crazy shiny object syndrome. Because he's an idea guy. And most people who are idea people get this because they always have ideas and they're usually amazing. They're good. They can probably make you money. And so it's not necessarily a bad thing to have ideas. The problem is if you spend all your time chasing ideas, you never complete one of them. So they had a rule that when Jeff had an idea, he had to write it down and put it in a folder and put it in a cabinet. I don't know if you know this about them.
And then, I didn't know that. Yeah.
So he had to write it. And they might not do it anymore. This was, 10 years ago. But he had to write it down, put it in a folder. And then in a month, they would open up the folder and go over all the ideas from the previous month. And then sort of decide, okay, is this going to stay in the folder? Or are we going to move it into the take action? Or are we going to cross it off and never talk about it again?
A whole month. That's a long time.
But I thought, so when they're talking about it, I was like, oh, that's what this is. Like, this is the thing that I've been thinking about and doing forever. But they've sort of defined it for me. And then I thought their solution, I don't want to like end the podcast right here. That's the solution. Put it on a folder. But I do think that is a genius way to sort of manage all the ideas, is that you write them down, put them in a folder, and put them away for a set period of time. A month, maybe. I don't know if that's too long. What do you think?
Well, we both know Jeff, and I know his personality. Yeah. He has a lot of unfinished projects, so I can see why that would work. But you lose out on that initial motivation if you wait that long, though, right? And the initial excitement.
I guess. So let's start by talking about where are you in your business? Do you already have a business that you're working on and you're getting ideas, or are you at zero and you're getting ideas? Because if you're at zero and you're getting ideas, you should probably jump on one of them and not put them all in a folder. But if you already have the one idea you're working on, starting the second idea can actually be very detrimental to your business.
You know, I would say it's always detrimental. Right, because you're splitting your focus on two things. Like, I'm just looking at my businesses right now. So I have my wife quit her job, and I have Bumblebee. Those are my two main properties. If I were to focus like the last, 11 years just on Bumblebee, mm-hmm. I'm sure we could have blown it up a lot more.
Yeah. Do you think the same goes for my wife quit? I mean, it would be hard because can't have my wife quit. Well, you could without Bumblebee, but the Bumblebee gives my wife quit a lot of legitimacy.
Yeah, plus it gives me a lot of content, actually, is what it does.
Yeah.
So, I guess so. Maybe what I always try to do is anything that I do has to apply to those businesses in some way. Okay. Like, if I start something new, it's got to amplify what I already do. So, I guess that's one way around it.
Yeah.
Do we define shiny object syndrome? It's when you chase, like, the next thing.
You're always chasing the next thing, yes.
Right. You're always chasing the next thing.
So I think that's a good initial place to start is if you have an idea, let's just say you have your idea, you put it in the folder. A month later, you open the folder. You look at your list of ideas. I think the first piece of criteria should be, will this help my current business or idea, or will it detract from my current business or idea?
I mean, it depends. So I would argue that you shouldn't start something new unless you've gone like 3 to 5 years in what you're currently doing. Would you agree with that statement? Or is that too extreme?
That's extreme.
That's extreme, you that's think? 3 years, you think that's extreme?
Chew stream. We got to find a new word for that.
Well, how many years then? I mean, you got to give like your business some runway first, right? Before you start something new.
Well, that's where I think the evaluating what it would do to the current business becomes critical. If this is something that, yes, it would help the business, but it's not like an integral thing, then, you know, put it away. But let's just say your idea is, like, I had an idea this morning. Well, we'll talk about this as a good example. So I run email marketing for a curriculum company. This morning I had this idea of how we're trying to increase our SMS. And we've been, you know, fighting this battle for a long time because her people are very hesitant. So this morning I had an idea to run basically a promotion to get people on the text list. It is detracting from everything else that I need to do. And it will take me probably 2 to 3 hours for the rest of the week to get it set up, to get the graphics, to get the promotion, you know, to get everything in place to make this happen, right? So that's kind of a shiny object in a way, because it's like not something that's already on my list. It's in lists of things to do, but yet it will help reach a goal for the company and one of my personal goals, which is to grow the SMS. So I am going to dedicate a couple hours this week to getting that all set up because I think it's a priority in the overall goals of what I'm doing. So I am absolutely going down a rabbit trail with this because it's going to keep me from doing probably 4 or 5 other things that I need to be working on. However, I think it will benefit the company in the long run if this gets in motion.
Okay, that in my opinion is not shiny object syndrome.
I think right? I think it is because it's taking me away from the core things that I do.
Sure, but it's related to what you do.
It is.
It's about getting people back to the website, and it's related to email because it's going to be the acquisition is going to be tied to email somehow.
Yes, yes.
If I know you, and yeah, and it's going to make money, but directly here, related to the business. Correct.
But here's what I think happens, because there's like the big shiny objects where it's like I'm going to start a YouTube channel, right? Like that's a big one. Versus I'm going to take this small, you know, couple hour project and take away from what I currently do. The problem I think a lot of people have is there are people that have these big ideas like Jeff, and then there are people that shiny object syndrome, these small things like what I'm doing, right? Like they're like, oh, I should go research this, or I should do this podcast thing, or I should, you know, there's like they do all these little things and those actually take them away from the daily sort of drudgery of the business itself. And I think that is where, like, I think the big thing is harmful, but the little thing can actually be worse. Cause a lot of times when you talk to people, we talk to people all the time where they're like, I don't have enough time to do this. I'm running out of hours in my week. I can't figure out how to do this on the side. And then when you talk to them, it's like they spend all their time chasing these things that don't matter. And instead of just slogging away at the stuff that does. So I think this is an example of an idea that does take me away from the core business, but it actually improves the business over time. So that's a yes. But if you use that same criteria for another little idea, then if it doesn't build the core business, then you can't let it take you away from your daily things that you need to do for your business.
Yeah. So for example, if you told me that you wanted to just start running TikTok ads just for fun.
Yes, perfect example.
That would be a major thing. So what is the criteria then for what is acceptable and what is not? You clearly need some metrics here, right? So, for me, I think about like the learning curve, the mm-hmm. expected impact, you know, given a certain amount of time and what the probability of all that actually making money is within that given time frame.
Yeah.
I never write all this stuff down. You must have some sort of criteria.
My criteria is pretty similar to yours. The learning curve to me is one where I feel like people need to evaluate. So maybe because the texting thing, I'm going to set it up in a way that I haven't done before. So there is going to be a little bit of a learning curve for me on how to set it up. However, once I learned that, I've now learned a skill that I can use over and over again. So it's like, it's not like, if I was like, oh, I'm going to start running TikTok ads. Well, I'm not an ad agency. I'm never going to be. If I take all this time to learn TikTok ads, which is high risk for me, it's not like I'm going to take that skill and parlay it into anything else ever, most likely. So the time it takes to learn the skill becomes like a huge investment versus time it takes to learn how to set up this texting, automation, which once I learn it, I'll be able to use it. We could use it in Seller Summit. We could use it in Profitable Audience. I could use it in Happy Housewife. I could use it for my client. Like having that knowledge becomes very valuable versus like a one-off knowledge. So the one-off knowledge to me is a deterrent as far as evaluating the project.
What I find funny about this entire conversation is I don't really consider you a shiny object type of person. Because just getting you to do some of these projects that we're working together on really took some yanking of your arm, right?
That makes it sound like I don't do anything. You have to rephrase that.
What I'm saying is like to get you to agree to do some of these things was like pulling teeth.
Because right? I knew the commitment.
I see.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a huge commitment, was it? I guess maybe it was. I don't know.
It is a huge commitment. But I think that when you're, and this is where I think the shiny object syndrome is hard for people, is that typically building a business, we've talked about this so many times, the first couple years are hard. You know, when you're not making a lot of money, when you feel like you're working and putting out content. I mean, you talked about this, you know, back when you started My Wife Quit Her Job, you were posting, I think you said you were posting like 5 times a week. And after a month, you were just thinking, there's no way I can maintain this, especially when there's no return. And so it would have been easy for most people. You don't really have this as much, but it would be easy to like continually be distracted. Like, oh, maybe I'll spend more time on Twitter. Maybe I'll do this. Maybe I'll do that. And at that point in your business, you wouldn't have known that Twitter was going to be helpful or, a business tool for you like it is today. And so it's easy when you're in the beginning stages of a business or when you're in a stagnant stage of your business, as opposed to like reevaluating what's in your business already, is to just try to grab something new.
I would say that most people in the beginning, if they're struggling, a lot of times what I see after teaching my class for a long time is that they're really just throwing spaghetti at the wall. Mm-hmm. But the problem is that you need to work on something for like a year for that spaghetti to actually stick on one thing, right? But if you're just spending like a month here on this, a month, let's say a month on Facebook ads, a month on Google ads, a month on Instagram, and you're not seeing any results, I mean, that's normal, right?
Yeah.
It takes a lot longer. So what I heard you say is that you agree with my 2-year rule.
I think you said 3 to 5, first of all, which is obscene.
Well, I was thinking about a business, not what you're talking about, like try SMS for 3 to 5 years. But if you're going to do a business, three to five years, right?
I think to try a business 3 to 5 years, but to maybe implement new things in your business. You do this all the time where you're like, this year I'm only going to do YouTube. This year I'm going to focus on TikTok. You're not 1 year doing YouTube for 2 months, TikTok for 2 months, Twitter for 2 months, and giving up. And I think that's where... Actually, I see it in your course, Profitable Online Store, where people get some products, they have a product line, they launch the store, they launch on Amazon, they're not seeing a lot of sales, and then they're like, we need more products, right? We need to, as opposed to going, well, hey, let's figure out why the first products aren't selling. Maybe it's a design flaw. Maybe it's a price point. Maybe you're not running the ads correctly. Whatever it is, instead of like taking more time and really diving into the current business, they think just... I'll just start on Shopify or I'll just do this. Like they think that starting something totally new is going to be the solution as opposed to, first of all, evaluating what you currently have.
Yeah. And I would say that most people just give up too quickly, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, this product was a dud.
Yeah.
Or advertising just doesn't work. Yeah. It just doesn't work.
I see that all the time. Advertising doesn't work for me.
Yeah.
Like, usually it does. The advertisers want to make their money.
And I'm trying to think, I have a friend, or we have a mutual friend, I will not name this person, like he'll launch a course and it actually does really well. And then he decides to launch another course.
Yes.
without even finishing like supporting the first one.
Yeah.
Because it did so well. I mean, there's some amount of excitement to starting mm-hmm. something new. Like, I know for me, I really like that first 70%.
Yeah. The last 30% of starting something. Is terrible.
but it's not I'm also terrible, but I'm also used to like the grind too yeah. of that last 30.
Yeah.
So
how do people find the excitement in the grind? Because I think that's a lot of what shiny object syndrome comes from. It is exciting to start something new. It's like Christmas, right? Like it's exciting when you're a kid to open the gifts and see what's under there, and then, you know, 4 days later you're back playing with the same toys you've always had because those are the old reliable ones, right? So how do you create that excitement in the grind to keep you on course? Because our friend Darren Rouse from Pro Blogger has been grinding at Pro Blogger for 100 years. It feels like, I don't even know. It's probably
is that
been...
site still up?
I was on it today actually, but same okay. Made me think about it. But I remember when he gave the talk at World Domination Summit. And he talked about that first ebook that he knew he should write. And he put it off for 3 years, I think it was, he said. And then one day he was basically thinking and said, you know what, I'm just going to dedicate like 30 minutes every morning. I'm going to wake up 30 minutes earlier and I'm going to write this book. And he wrote it in 90 days or something silly. Like it wasn't very long. So he grinded out the book in 90 days just by spending 30 minutes a day on it. And then made $30,000, I think, in his first, week of launching or something. I mean, it was a lot of money for an inexpensive ebook. And so he was able to take, and he had been at Pro Blogger at that point for probably 10 years at least, or at least 8 or 9 at that point. So how do you take, you know, how do you find that excitement in the stuff that you're already doing to help increase your revenue versus just trying to like jump on something new?
Yeah, actually, I'm thinking about him now, and that's like some serious staying power. Like that site's like 20 years old at this point.
Yeah.
So how do you stay excited in the grind? That was the original question, right?
Yeah.
And I don't really have a good answer for you. I think
you're like just suck it up.
I think you have to, and the way that I am able to do it, because I've been grinding away at Bumblebee for 15 years. Mm-hmm. I've been grinding away at My Wife Quit for, I don't know, 14 years,
yeah.
I think at this point. So as long as there's a slot in my schedule for everything, I just feel like it's, I don't even think about it anymore. It's like, okay, this is what I do every week. This is what I tell myself. I tell myself, okay, I'm going to do it like this in this mm-hmm. schedule for as long as I can think. Like it just becomes part of my life at this mm-hmm. point. Like recording a podcast, this podcast has just become my Wednesday morning thing that I do.
Yeah.
And in that respect, you know, it just works out. Now, if it was something that I dreaded every single week, I think I would try to cut that out mm-hmm. or do something about it. Like there's the grind mm-hmm. and then there's like the suffering grind. And if it's the suffering grind type of thing, then it probably isn't the right thing for you.
But see that now we get into the whole like, well, how do you know if it's just suffering or just a period of time? And that's when the 3 to 5 years comes in.
Well, I'm just thinking if it's the suffering grind, and I know it's like time limited, mm-hmm. for example, this book,
yeah,
it's been a suffering grind, but I know it's going to be over in like 4 weeks, yeah. actually.
We'll all be grateful for that.
Yes, we'll all be grateful for that, including you, right?
Yes, including
you. But the other stuff like the business and the blog, like putting out a video a week or two videos a week, for example, like if I dreaded every minute of that every single week, I would know after like 6 months, mm-hmm. probably. And if that was the case after 6 months, I'd probably consider cutting that out or doing something about it. Like something needs to change. Yeah.
So one of the things that I think works for me is that if it's something that's a grind, but you know you have to do it, and it's not a suffering grind, it's just like, you know what, these are the things that have to be done, and I'd rather be doing something more fun in the business. I like to do the whole, you know, and this is silly because we're grownups, right? But you can reward yourself. Whether it's, you know, well, if I can get all this done, like last week, I wanted to take part of Friday off. and I had a ton of stuff to do. So I basically set all these goals that were really like meaningless because they were just goals of getting certain things done. But I basically set all these goals. So it's like if I hit all these goals, then I would take Friday off and go hang out with one of my friends in the afternoon. And you better believe that I grinded very happily all week because the promise of like, hey, on Friday, I'm going to be sitting at the river just hanging out was enough motivation for me to like get a bunch of things done that I didn't really want to do, but they had to be done. And so it kept me focused. And every time I sort of got off focus, I thought, well, do I want to give that up to, you know, do I want to give up the river on Friday for this little meaningless thing that's sort of interesting, but not great? And it was really motivational for me to complete that and get it all done. And by Thursday afternoon, I was done with my week. Like I had stuff that I could do, but like everything that was important and needed to be done and was a priority was absolutely finished.
So it's funny, I had a similar experience with this Japan trip that I just got back from. Mm-hmm. Like this vacation came at kind of a really bad time. Since we're still trying to, you know, close out Seller Summit, I have the book launch, which I'm literally on a podcast every single day.
We know. It's all over our internet feeds.
I crammed all that stuff in before the Japan trip so I could relax.
Yeah.
And I knew that I would not have an open mind or a clear mind on that trip unless I finished everything.
Yeah, because and I didn't want to go hang out with my friend on Friday and be answering emails. Because there's been times where she's texted me and said, hey, you want to hang out this afternoon? And I'll go, but then I'll spend the whole time on my phone. And that's not what I wanted to do. I wanted to be able to enjoy it and just hang out.
But here's what's amazing actually about this Japan trip now. Like I had this insane pace so that I could go on that trip. Mm-hmm. But once I finished everything, I was like, hey, you know what? I still have like another couple notches left on my belt in terms of what I can handle in a week.
Mm-hmm.
So I surprised myself and I'm like, okay, well, now that I'm at this, now that I just did this for like a week or two, maybe I can maintain this pace because it wasn't that bad.
Yeah, it wasn't that bad either. It's more about staying focused than working extra hours. It's just staying focused in the hours that you're working.
Yeah, so what I'm trying to say here is, unless you test your limits of productivity, like you don't even know what you're capable of.
Yeah. So right? You can't see this in the video screen, but and you can't see it if you're just listening, but I got a treadmill desk last week.
Are you on it right now?
No, good grief. No, absolutely.
Oh, okay.
So I've learned several things about myself. One, I cannot multitask. There are certain things I can't do while walking. So I got this treadmill desk and I have some like personal goals that I've set for myself of how many steps that I want to get a day on the treadmill desk. And I got it for a couple of reasons. One of which is I sit at this desk all day long. I have a nice office chair, but like every night my back, my neck and my upper back like are throbbing in pain and it's from being hunched over the desk. And I've tried I have a back thing and all this stuff. Nothing has really helped. So I was like, well, what if I spent half my day standing and walking and half my day sitting? I'd probably feel a lot better. I'd probably have more energy, but you know, whatever, all the benefits. So I ordered it off Amazon, nothing fancy, like bare bones type thing, a desk and a walking treadmill, and set it up. And I realized very quickly that I can't walk and type content. So I can walk and respond to emails and things like that. But when it comes to actual writing, like writing our Friday emails or writing emails for a client or writing blog posts, like I absolutely cannot do that and walk. Like I will fall off the treadmill. And I don't know what it is if like my brain, like maybe I have to learn it. Maybe it's a skill. Who knows? But I can do a lot of other things. I can respond to emails. I can set up stuff. I can like frame emails, right? I can set up everything except for the content. I can do Pinterest. I can respond to Seller Summit stuff, all these things. So I've had to prioritize my day based on what I'm doing when I'm on the treadmill. So when I'm, it's been like a game changer. It's so crazy, but it's forced me to restructure how I work because it's like, well, and I want to start my days off on the treadmill. So it's like, I've had to rearrange everything that I do because of the treadmill. And it's actually my productivity has skyrocketed because I get so much done when I'm walking because I'm like, well, I can't write. So I have to do everything else in that time. And then when I sit down at my computer, like the first day I did this, I sat down on my computer and started like answering emails. And I was like, no, I can't answer emails because I can do that while I'm walking. So I can only do things when I'm sitting that I can't do walking. So I've gotten more done in the past like 4 work days than I have probably in like 3 weeks, because I've had to restructure everything due to the desk.
That is interesting.
Yeah. You're like, that's the weirdest thing I've ever heard.
For me, I know I'm most productive in the morning. So mm-hmm. unless I do all the creative work in the morning, nothing's going to happen.
Yeah.
Later on. Like, I can't do work at night, so I don't even try.
No,
even
I can't.
My afternoons are pretty shot. Like, I.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But so. Yeah, so that's forced me to really. And I think actually you can do this even if you don't. Like, and I'm working on 2 different computers. So it's like, this computer is for this, the computer on the treadmill desk is for something else. And. But I think you can do this without having a treadmill, is that basically just setting up systems to where when during this time period, let's just say you're more productive in the morning. So from 8 to 10, you will never check email. You will never do X, Y, Z. Like, you'll never do anything that requires less productivity or less focus or less concentration. And then you know that like in the afternoons, you're not as creative or you're not as awake, whatever it is. Then you set all the like mindless type tasks for that time of day. So the treadmill just forced me into that schedule, because I always thought like, oh, I'm pretty good at that. I'm terrible at it. But now that I have to be, it's been a game changer.
That's interesting. That's like the complete opposite of what I do, I think. So you know me, I have my little Gmail draft, right?
Yes.
Of all my tasks.
I started one, by the way. I gave up.
You went to the dark side. You tried to do what?
A Gmail draft.
Are you serious?
Yes. That's, remember when I said I have some questions for you? They were all in the Gmail draft.
People always make fun of me for doing it. I think it's a bad system, personally. I just use it because it's convenient.
I didn't convert to it. I just started it. But,
yeah, so I what I do is like the night before, I just kind of organize the priorities for the day. Like, this Gmail draft is like multiple pages long now.
You're like, it's a book. It's a book in itself.
Yeah, so basically what I do is I just order what I need to do in the day in order of priority. And that way when I wake up, I don't have to think. Mm-hmm. I just do it in that order of priority. With your method, I don't think that would work for me personally, because like the stuff that I can do at the treadmill, mm-hmm. those might be like low priority items.
Well, they're not. I mean, I would not say responding to our Seller Summit attendees is low priority.
Well, you know what I mean. Like,
you're right. Like, and part of me was like, well, maybe I'll do the treadmill in the afternoons, but I really just want to do it in the morning because I want to hit the goal. And then usually I get back on it in the afternoon and do some more stuff. But usually I've hit my goal by like 9:30 or 10 in the morning on the treadmill.
Your goal, like 10,000 steps? Is that?
Yeah. On the treadmill.
That's impressive. So. Yeah.
But it's amazing. Like, I've never like thought I was super coordinated. I didn't think I was uncoordinated. I am absolutely uncoordinated. Like, if I get too focused on my computer, I will find myself drifting off the treadmill. Like,
I interviewed some guy on the podcast while he was on the treadmill.
My treadmill's not quiet. Like, it's a cheap treadmill, so it's not quiet. Because I called Andrea the other morning. I was like, I'm talking to you from my new treadmill. She's like, I can tell. Like, good to know. Noted.
Well, it was distracting having him on the podcast because he was like this.
Yes.
Like, his head was bobbing up and down.
And you have to get used to, I mean, I highly recommend moving from like sitting to standing, because I think that's also helped my productivity, is the movement. And I know you are like, I go into my office, I close the door, I turn off all the lights, and I hunch over my computer like a troll and code for 10 hours. But for me, that's when you're like, why'd you call me a troll? For me, that's when I can't do that. So I start to get distracted. But the movement from back and forth has helped me a lot stay focused, because it gives me like a little break. I get on the treadmill, I start doing something different, and I set the timer. I do 45 minutes at a time on each, and then it's really been helpful because it's like it kind of feeds the ADD of like, okay, you're switching, you're doing something new, you can get a drink, da-da-da, and then you go back into the new thing, and so you're not just hunched over your computer for 8 hours a day.
Hmm. I just realized we've completely veered off the original topic of this pod, which was shiny object syndrome.
No, because I think shiny object syndrome comes from being bored a lot of times, or being discouraged, or wanting something exciting. And I think you can bring excitement into that by just shifting your, like you were saying, like, hey, I shifted my whole schedule to go to Tokyo. Well, you managed to get everything done. You weren't thinking about doing anything else because you were thinking about getting your stuff done.
I don't have the bandwidth to take on anything else right now.
Like, I can't think of anything new.
So you know me, and you make fun of me for this all the time. Like, I like to look at my calendar and see nothing.
Yes, I know.
And you've been making fun of me because of this book launch, which thankfully ends in 4 weeks. I've had to work afternoons.
Yeah.
Right? Usually I don't work in the afternoon. My day is done at noon.
Yeah.
But I've realized that I have a lot more headroom because of that. Like, there's a lot of hours in the afternoon.
There is a lot. That's crazy how that works.
That can be used to do stuff. But So you're saying the cure to shiny object syndrome is productivity?
I don't think it's the cure. I think one of the things that if you and there are people that we know that struggle deeply with this, right? Like, they can't ever complete a task because they're always like, oh, but this, oh, but that. So I think one of the things that you can do for yourself is to just change up your day, right? Where, you know, you're bringing your own excitement by like getting a treadmill, trying to work different hours than you normally work, switching up your schedule, like whatever it is, you know, setting a goal for yourself, like, hey, I'm going to take a Friday off if I get everything done. And when you set a goal like that, or set a goal like, I'm going on vacation, I want to be able to like really not have to do anything when I'm on vacation, then you don't have time. Like, you sort of eliminate shiny object syndrome because you don't like, you're like, well, if I do that, then there's no way I'm going to get this other thing done or other reward or whatever it is. So I think that's one of the best ways to do it. Another thing that I've found is helpful for me is reading books, which sounds kind of silly, but it's almost like, well, if I can live through someone else's shiny object syndrome. Now I read a lot of like business and marketing books, but like reading things like memoirs and just fiction and just like kind of moving your brain to a different space. I feel like it fills something of like almost like an entertainment or, you know, interest, but yet it kind of like just, I don't know what it is, but it just something about it, like, to me, gets me more focused on what I need to do when I'm done.
Here's something that I've been trying to do lately. And this is because I read Michael Hyatt's book, Mind Your Mindset. Mm-hmm. Like, if you can reframe certain things that feel like the grind in a different way. So let me give you an example here. Like, sometimes I just not in the mood to film a YouTube video, mm-hmm. right? Like, it's part of the schedule, but I'm like, oh, okay. I got to turn on the camera and I got to shower.
Get your energy up.
Got to put on a shirt, maybe comb my hair.
You have to put pants on. No, you don't. Not for your videos.
But I tell myself, hey, this is cool that I get to do this and that I'm at home. Mm-hmm. And I just try to think of all the positives about what I'm currently doing. And that makes me appreciate just the lifestyle that I have. And that helps a lot.
I have to maintain this lifestyle, and part of that is making videos.
Yes. Well, I just think of the positives. Like, hey, mm-hmm. you know, thousands of people are going to watch this. I'm going to get some feedback from it. And yeah, that always, whenever I want to try something new or I start dreading what I'm working on, I just try to think of the positives.
So that's sort of what I was getting with reading some of the books. So, like, for example, I just read Matthew Perry's book, his memoir. I don't know if it's a memoir. Is it a memoir if they're still alive?
I'm talking about the Friends dude, right?
Yeah, the Friends guy. And I don't know if you know anything about him, but he had a massive drug and alcohol problem.
I did know that.
Yeah.
The drug problem.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Just, I mean, like, horrific. Like, when you read the book, you're sort of just like, you're like, what? No. Like, you're listening to him talk about all of his poor decisions and you're like yelling at him, even though it's already happened, you know, 20 years earlier. But reading people's stories, like, you know, like, I've read Michelle Obama's, but like Melinda Gates, like all these people and the things that they've done, it sort of is inspiring to think either you see the things that they've done and get inspired by like how they did stay the course and sort of stayed focused, or you read something like Matthew Perry's book where you're like, you squandered away so much of your life by chasing after something that was not good for you, right? And so it's sort of motivating both ways, right? Either like, look at these people who have achieved levels of greatness, like the Nike book from the Nike founder. Like, that book's so motivating, right? Like, the dude just like plodded on and like overcame a bunch of stuff. And then you read like Matthew Perry's book where you're like, oh my gosh, you made so many poor decisions about your life. Thankfully, you're still standing. And so to me, that stuff is always motivating to either stay on track or work, not harder, but like work more focused and stay on course and like, hey, this is what I've decided to do. I need to keep doing it. I can't veer off the path, because if I veer off the path, I'm probably not going to be able to get to where I want to be. And if you think about that as like actually like a hiking analogy, right? Like if you're on a path and you're trying to get from point A to point B, you're trying to do a trail. And if you just stay the path, you're going to get to the end of the trail. So if you stay the path of your current business, you're probably going to grow it and have some level of success. But if you veer off your path, you might ever never actually get to the end of the trail, right? You might go in a circle. You might end up back to where you've started. And you might not ever see that success that you could have had if you just stayed focused on what you've already started.
I mean, here's how I think also. All the great companies mm-hmm. that you can think of around the world have been around for decades.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I think Amazon, I can't remember the exact statistic now, but it made like 7% of its earnings in like the first 7 or 8 years or something like that. But like the bulk of it, like 90 something, just recently happened in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
And just think, if Bezos got tired of Amazon and just launched something else, I mean, yeah. it wouldn't be where it is today. Same with Facebook, same with any of the companies.
Well, and you think about too, like using Amazon, because I know how much we all love Jeff. You know, they started off, I think they lost money for a while.
Oh, for many years they lost money.
Which is common with any big business, but they just kept going. And it's not like when they started, they had their own fleet of delivery drivers and delivery trucks, right? Like they utilized the systems that were already in place. It seems like, and I don't know tons about Amazon's like infrastructure, but it seems like only when they kind of perfected what they were doing, they then introduced like, hey, let's have our own delivery drivers. Let's have our own trucks. You know, like we're not going to try to beat UPS or put the post office at its game out the gate. And so in your own business, like don't start with your own delivery drivers and trucks. Start with the one thing, get that down, like what you do. Start with one thing, get it down, then introduce the next thing. So take all your great ideas, put them in a folder, and don't look at them until you're really good at the one thing. And then you can go back and look at the big ideas and decide what comes next for you.
I mean, I would argue that the way I do it isn't even ideal. Like ideally, you should just stick with that one thing. The problem is, I know in my personality, I need something new to just keep me interested. Mm-hmm. And that's why I have my thing. I just have that time frame policy just to make sure I actually give my best effort for that year to learn that one thing. Because oftentimes, I would say minimum for anything that you learn is a year.
Oh, yeah.
And arguably more than that. I'm just thinking about like Ultimate Frisbee. I've been playing that for like 25 years now. And I still don't even know the game. Like,
yes, you
I'm physically limited. I'm physically limited.
By the time you learn that game, yeah. you're going to be too old to play it.
Yeah.
But it's a really good point. Like the chances of you being successful are best when you focus on one thing. And every successful person will tell you that. Like I've never met a single person that's like, I became successful by doing 72 things moderately well. Like most people are like, I did one thing. I did it really, really well. And then maybe they branched off into something else, but they didn't branch off or chase the next thing until they were really killing it at the first thing.
And this is like a little pet peeve of mine. When someone comes in and tells me something doesn't work and they tell me they tried everything.
I know. I've seen you respond to these.
I'm like, oh, you tried everything. Even I haven't tried nearly anything, you know, close yeah. to everything. Yeah. And then I'll just rat off a couple of things and they're like, well, no, I didn't do that. So the fact is you've never tried everything. Yeah. You just tell yourself that right now. Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode. Now, for more information about this episode, go to profitableaudience.com/podcast, where we list all of the tools and resources mentioned in our show notes.
And if you enjoyed listening to this episode, please go to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review. When you write us a review, it not only makes our day, but it helps keep this podcast up in the ranks so other people can use this information, find the show more easily, and get some awesome business advice.
Leaving a review is by far the best way to support the show. And please tell your friends, because the greatest compliment that you can give us is to provide a referral to someone else, either in person or to share it on the web.
And if you're interested in building your own profitable audience, subscribe to our free 6-day mini course, where we walk you through the exact steps needed to find your niche, build a website, grab email subscribers, and monetize your content. You can sign up at profitableaudience.com/free.
Thanks for listening.